We all love an impressive performance on the field. And now, thanks to our latest sponsor, Pilot, you can have an impressive performance in the bedroom too. Pilot provides Aussie men with the clinical tools to treat bedroom issues like erectile dysfunction and premature ejaculation. Not a fan of the doctor's office? Pilot is all online, so you can sort it out right now over the phone. And with free delivery Australia-wide, you can be back on your game in no time. Head to pilot.com.au today and get started. Play hard until the final whistle with Pilot. Aces, I know I always go on about the Rixies, but I got huge news. We have all our styles and colours restocked on the website right now. It's been months. We ran out of stock, but we're back. Get online, grab some sunglasses at rickseyewear.com.au right now and use our little discount code ACES if you want a 20% discount code on the house. Righto, let's get into the show. Welcome back to another episode of Only Sport. We've got some jockeys in the building. The boys are finally on the podcast. We've got Regan Bayless and Dylan Gibbons. Boys, welcome to the Only Sport.
Pleasure to be on here, Tommy.
Finally, we've teed this up. Been looking forward to speaking to you boys. I don't think I've heard a podcast with a jockey, and I know you guys pretty well now. We love our NFL. Good to see Aaron Rodgers still representing over there. Big movement in the NFL as we record this podcast. You've just lost Aaron Jones, but you picked up Josh Jacobs, so you'd be pretty happy with that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's a good little consolation.
It is big. It is big. Boys, keen to talk about the industry. As I said, everyone out there that loves their horse racing, they only see Saturday and every other day, but Saturday's the main day. Keen to find out how you get to where you are. Group one jockeys, you've done it all. You're still very young, but yeah, start with you, Riggs. Like, where did you grow up? Talk to me when you first jumped on a horse.
So I was brought up on a farm in Queensland, so always had horses and cattle and all that sort of stuff around me, and basically learnt how to ride through mustering and rounding up cattle and just always sort of jumping on the ponies from when I was a kid. But my father, Jamie, he was a jockey for 20 years and then turned horse trainer when I was growing up, and my brother was a jockey as well, so sort of just followed that, hit their footsteps, and never really wanted to do anything else.
How old were you when you jumped on the back of one?
I would have been, 3 or 4 years old.
How does it work with school growing up? Like, are you guys doing track work before school?
Well, I rorted the system. when I first started, Dad moved my brother and I and himself to Melbourne just to give us the best chance to get into it. My boss then, Peter Moody, said, you have to go to school, otherwise I won't sign you up to be an apprentice. So I had to sort of juggle that. First off, I was going to a private grammar school, and Dad said, "Nate, you're taking the piss here." So I ended up going to Pakenham High towards the end, and I think my attendance was less than like 30%. Didn't do any homework, paid some bloke to do my last final assignments. And because I was sort of riding, and I was riding winners, I was sort of like that little school's pin-up boy. So I'd do a column in the newsletter like once a week or once a fortnight, and I don't know how I passed, but I got that year 12 certificate, which was beautiful.
Did you sleep in your exams like me?
Yeah.
So when you're an apprentice, talk to me, let's play like as if I'm very dumb, which I can be. Apprentice, how long you got the apprentice, the apprenticeship, like how long does it last? How's it all work? How do you even get your foot in the door? Clearly you guys have got families that have been around it, but if you're a young kid out there that wants to be like you boys, how do they start?
Well, you sort of, you obviously got to have a boss to start off with, someone that would be happy to sign you up as an apprentice. Obviously, Dylan's apprentice to Chris Lee's down at Newcastle, and I was apprentice out of my apprenticeship now, obviously, but I was apprentice to Peter Moody.
And how long is it, 4 years?
Yeah, about 4 years, but it all depends how long it takes to outride your claim. So if you can outride your claim quick, which is a certain amount of winners.
Yeah, you've got 80 winners in each sort of little jurisdiction, call it. You got country, provincial, metro.
And as an apprentice, it's like being a young, a first year, second year player, a development player at an AFL club. There's always the old boys around. What's it like? They make you sweep the horses shit in the sheds. Are you doing all the horrific jobs as a young fella? Like, give us a bit more of an insight into what it's like.
Yeah, absolutely. When you first start off, you're getting up early, you're basically doing all the stable work.
What time's early?
3:30.
That's early.
Yeah, so you're mucking out boxes, then you'd ride all your horses, then after that you'd stay back and do the groundwork, which is sweeping, grooming the horses, all that sort of stuff, and riding that day. And the days that you weren't riding at the races, you'd go back in the afternoon shift and do the afternoon shift. But the further you get into your apprenticeship and the more busy you get, that workload sort of cuts down in the stable, and then you sort of get treated more like a jockey, you know?
Yeah.
And then after that, then you're away.
How do you know you're on a good horse? Like, what are the characteristics of a good horse? Because everyone, I mean, I've got a lot of mates, geez, it looks well in the yard, have a look at its ass, or look at how, like, tall, long it is, or whatever it is. But when you boys get on top of a horse, and, you know, you've done your research, you know you're on, you know, you're on multiple Group 1 horses all the time, but how do you know, like, on the day when you're riding, you're like, oh, geez, this feels good. What does it feel like?
Well, obviously, you know their form. Or you know the horse before going to the races and riding them. So you're doing replays, and you might have been lucky enough to ride them at track work and have a relationship with the horse and ridden it in its gallops, its trials leading up to that meeting. But a good horse, you just get the feel for it straight away. They just feel different underneath you. They got good action, and yeah, they just feel like rockets that when you push the button, they go, you know.
Take me back to your first winner, boys. Like, you know, how many rides had you had at that point and the moment, and who was around? What track was it? Do you remember it? I'd imagine you'd remember it quite well. Start with you, Regan.
My first ride was lucky enough to be a winner.
Really?
I had one ride for my boss, Peter Moody. He sent me down to Donald, which is about 3 hours from Melbourne, and went there and rode a horse called Alana's Dream. And, lucky enough to get the cash. And all my family was there, and it's a memorable day. It's something you'd never forget. It's an amazing feeling. And I remember thinking, how easy is this, you know, after that first win. And then my boss he was that happy with the first ride, he gave me two favourites the following week at Swan Hill, and I just slaughtered them both. And I just thought, I went from up here to down here within a week, you know. But great day.
That's awesome. When you go on a Donald and you're driving three out, are you on your own?
I went in the horse float.
Oh, nice. In the back?
Yeah, in the back of the horse float.
What do you mean?
So, obviously, you got the truck driver, you got the strapper in the front, or the foreman, and then, because I was an apprentice, I'm way down the food chain, so I was in the back with the horse. There's a little seat there, and it's that cold in Melbourne, obviously. It was around June, July.
What, a little seat belt and a little horse?
Yeah, a little
really?
Seat belt, got the horse there, and, you got the horse rug to put over you for a sleep, and, you're sleeping on a bucket, and...
That's like something out of Far Out.
Yeah, so I didn't have a good prep, but we got the job done. That's all.
What was the horse paying?
It was favourite, so I think my boss made sure that
it was a good ride.
It was a good ride. So when he was ready to send me the races, he wanted to send me off on a winning note. So
yeah,
I got around like it was all me, but he had a cherry ripe on the day, and
that's
I think,
good
I
by,
think it started $2.20.
That's good by Moody.
Absolutely, yeah.
You've had a few, you've had a few with him. That's I remember Red Kirk Warrior was when we first met. How long ago was that?
That was, I think I rode my first Group 1 on him in 2017, and then the following season he won a consecutive Newmarket and a Lightning Stakes as well in 2018. So he was trained by Lindsay Park, but he was a terrific horse.
I remember you riding that one and saluting. What about you, Dale? First winner?
Well, I actually started off the exact same as Regan, got given an odds on favourite. Thought they were just going to send me off and make it look easy. I come out, flattened about three people and got rolled on it. So I didn't have a great start as Regan. But it probably took me 7-8 rides, and mine was similar. I had to go to Coffs Harbour, and that from Newcastle was a 4-hour trek. Mum drove me down. Was able to get the winner that day. Not many people there. It was Coffs Harbour on a Saturday. So it was sort of mum and just mainly phone calls on the way home. But like Regan said, there's even when you talk about it now, you know, it gives you that good sort of bubbly feeling. It's a special one, and you sort of never forget it.
I'd imagine you'd never forget it. How many winners have you both ridden so far in your career? Don't tell me you don't know either, Regan.
Well, how many have you ridden? I'll get Dylan's answer, then I'll add a couple of hundred on it.
I'm getting close to 400 now.
Wow. That's and what's like what Damien Oliver ride on Glen Boss? How many winners do they have?
Oh,
are they at the 10,000 or 5,000?
So when you ask a jockey that question, you always divide it by two. So he said close to 400, so maybe like 200. He's on 215.
I'll look it up. You want a fact check?
What about you?
I'm actually not sure.
Less than me.
Group ones? What about group ones?
Six
and Dill?
I'm five off in there.
You're on one. And do you guys ever, like, do you do much goal setting with your group ones? And, you know, I mean, that's obviously a lot of luck. How hard, like, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking, how do you get more Group 1s as a jockey? Is it a bit of luck, you know?
It's you can't really, you can just put yourself in the best position to maybe achieve that. You know, that's, and that all starts from your hard work. You're building relationships with trainers and owners, and trying to find that good horse. You know, it's hard to say at the start of the season, oh, I'm going to plan to win a Golden Slipper. You might not even have a ride in the race. You know, and that's horse racing. So the best way to sort of put yourself in a position to do that is to be riding winners, doing all the 1%ers right, and giving yourself the best opportunity and to find yourself on a good horse.
What's a 1%er in horse racing as a jockey?
Just like, even off the track or on the track, there's 1%ers.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of little 1%ers. It nearly adds up to 20% when you look at it. But it's just doing the right thing, doing the due diligence, and making sure you talk to your connections, whether you've rode it good or bad, and just having that sort of bit of pride to go talk to them and own up whether it was a good one or a bad one, and just making sure you know, we're a single person, but act as if we're a business, because at the end of the day, we want people to want our services. So, and like what Regan touched on with trying to set goals, they're a bit tricky because it's similar to other sports where the grand final funnels the two best teams into the game. So where with jockeys, they get to grand final day, they want who's at the top. So it's hard to get that out, but like Regan said, you just got to be riding winners, try and build them connections and put yourself in a position that hopefully someone says, sweet, we'll give you a go, and then you get it from there.
I'm just sitting here smiling. I'm just visualising when you've had a bad ride and you've got to deal with the owners, the trainers. Give us an insight onto some of your worst days, your worst rides, what it looks like, and then we'll go to the good ones.
But one of recent memory was I travelled to the Warrnambool Cup to ride a horse called Nerve Not Verve, and it was an absolute mud lark. And the Warrnambool Carnival is known for heavy tracks, so I just remember it was on day two or day three of the carnival, and I was living in Sydney. It was only a couple of years ago now, and I flew to Melbourne. Me and Chad Schofield. We hired a car and drove down to Warrnambool, and I just remember thinking this thing is just unbeatable. Like, I think there was three top in the order of the market end up coming out because of the wet track, and there was just money pouring for my thing, and I just thought, oh, it's just unbeatable. I couldn't stuff it up. Drew barrier one. I led going down to the first corner, and then I was just stuck on the rail. One come up and led me then. So then I was in the box seat. Then another one whipped round. Then all of a sudden I'm three or four back the rail, and it was just an absolute train wreck. So I only got out that at the top of the straight, and then I went over with my whip. Obviously, for people that don't know, there's a whip count in horse racing, so you can only hit them a certain amount of times up the straight. And I think I went over 10 or 15 times and ran second and just got beat. I remember just getting into the rooms and telling Schofield, I said, start the car. I said, we've got to get out of here. And I'm getting a fine, suspended, and got beat. So that was not one of my best days.
And is that a night, like when you're stuck in that position when it's all muddy and that, is it hard to see like what's going on? Like, you know, how do you, it's obviously a dangerous sport. You can't just get out. Like, is it, what are you thinking about when you're stuck on that, you know, in that position?
Obviously wet tracks, we can ride with sort of, we got dark tint goggles that we ride in on like a sunny dry day. And then if it's a wet rainy day, we tend to go to sort of the clear pair of goggles, which just gives our visibility better to see. And we can sometimes put on two or three pairs in a race and pull them down whilst we're riding.
Yeah, it makes it a bit tricky though, sometimes on them real heavy tracks, the kickback that comes back. If I hand you a pair of goggles once we're done, you'd be shocked what we look through, but sort of your instincts have to kick in at some points there, because if they're on the bridle or whatever, you can't really take one end off the wheel to pop them down.
So, yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So wet tracks aren't the nicest some days.
Yeah, I can only imagine, yeah. And did you speak to the trainer after that?
He wasn't on course. I think his foreman was, but I know that he wasn't too happy. And I knew I'd get suspended for the whip and fined. So, and I was paid flights to go down there, so it ended up being an expensive trip. And I just remember just trying to get out of the jockey's room as quick as I could before they called me into the jockey's room. And we got out, we got halfway down the highway, and the stewards rang me and did the inquiry over the phone. And yeah, so that wasn't one of my best days.
Oh, we'll go to the highlights in a second, but Dil, what about you? Any rides where you've just had a stinker and had to deal with the trainers and owners?
Yeah, one of them was at Randwick, so Regan was sitting across from me. He seen me at my near worst there. Leading into it, I don't think I'd been riding great, and I was on one of the low points, and
sort of had a horse that was in the market, looked like it's raced to win, and on paper it just seemed so simple. I'd jump, be first three, peel out, go win, I'm back. Anyway, missed the kick. I've drove it into a spot. I've played dodgem cars most of the race. I've got out, sealed it to the front, hit a brick wall, and just absolutely walked late. And I come back and I was just that sort of headless. And when I got back, the owners and trainers just bombed me. I was in all sorts, and I come back and I sat down and just put my hands in my head, and I just didn't move for about 5 minutes. I was just, yeah. I was that brain faded. Regan come over, gave me a pat on the back, he goes, "You right, mate?" I went, "Nah, not really." that one took a bit to recover, but sometimes you got to bottom out before you can come
yeah,
out.
We've all had, I appreciate your voice sharing that. It's you know, we're all human at the end of the day, and there's people, when they're investing money, they can get quite angry. And when people, you know, own the horse, I'd imagine they get, yeah, they speak before they think. So let's go to the highlights, though. I know I've heard a funny story about this bloke when he rode back-to-back Route 1s, wasn't it? And they reckon the locker room was going wild. It might have been COVID. He put himself in his own room because there was a 1.5 or 3-metre rule, and you could hear Regan just flying around. Just, can you give us an insight to that day? Because back-to-back Route 1s, I can only imagine the vibes would be up and about for the big fella.
Yeah, that was incredible. But as you said, it was during COVID, so everyone was like split up. Normally we're in the one jockey's room, but there was people sort of split up all over the shop, and I had my own little room, and won the first group one, the flight stakes on Never Been Kissed, and I think she was 50 to 60 to one that day, and I knew my best chance was Private Eye in the Epsom, and he was a race straight after, and I didn't get to sort of think about too much after winning the flight stakes. I knew that I wanted to get the job done on him, and he was able to fly down the outside and win the Epsom, and yeah, I remember just turning that little room that I was in into like a nightclub mid-meeting, so I was absolutely wrapped, and that was during COVID, so no one was there, but you would have thought there was a 400,000 on course.
What were you doing? Were you walking around like Ric Flair in there?
Yeah, or what? Ric Flair, yeah, just getting around.
And what do the other boys do? Because they're obviously, probably some of them are a bit flat, they're probably just lost on the favourite. Like, do they have a laugh? Or they?
Yeah, they didn't get an option. Like, I was just getting around. Even if they didn't want it, I was getting around them, and get around me, I was just carrying on.
Oh, that's very good. I'd love to have some. They should get some more video footage. And you know, they do Netflix series. I'd love them to see a Netflix series on you boys, especially at Randwick and Flemington every week, or the main tracks. What about you, Dil? Your Group One win. You've had one. Who was it? Who was it on? And the memory of it.
Yeah, that was explosive, Jay. It was in a Sydney Cup. It would probably meant a bit more that one, because probably the couple of weeks leading into it, I was fortunate enough to get on Montefiore, a pretty good horse in her own right, because Jason Collett got hurt at the time, so I was riding her, you know, every fortnight, and she'd be single figure odds in Group One, so I was always going there hoping it'd happen. And probably a week or two prior, she slipped at about the 600 and cost herself a length and got beat ahead in a Group One, so I was still a bit flat from that. And I turned up that day, he was 30 to 1, his form was sort of in and out. The trainer and connections were just pretty much like, you know, go out there, have fun, see what you can do. And for 3,200 metres, it took about 3,000 of it for me to realise that I was gonna win it, because he was travelling well. When I come out, there was sort of a long gap to the leaders, but they sort of come back to me at the furlong. And I'm not normally one to roar at a horse, but that last furlong, I don't think I stopped. My throat was killing me after the race. I just roared at it the whole way. So
that's special.
Yeah, it meant a lot. And I had a lot of good family and friends there as well. So
that's even better.
When I come back and to see that, and I always thought I'd be a bit of a cat and cry when I won my first Group One, but I held it together. And then Emma Friedman goes, "Oh, what would your dad be thinking?" And she brought me to tears.
Yeah. That's brilliant, mate. It's outstanding. I love it. I love seeing you boys ride. I'm always just, you know, if I tune in, I'm putting a bit of money on who you guys are on. I don't even look at the form. It's great to see you boys go well. What about the prize money? This isn't a thing that, it's public knowledge prize money, so I don't feel too uncomfortable asking this question, but how does it all work? You know, I guess for people out there that don't follow the horse racing and don't understand how jockeys make a living, how do you make, you know, how does it all work?
So we get paid a flat.
Yeah, flat.
Tea.
Yeah, about, I think it's now up to $250. So that doesn't change whether you're riding in a Newcastle Maiden or a Group One. So that's just the flat rate for a ride everywhere. I think each state differs slightly, but then from there, prize money's broken up however they do it for each race. You know, first is normally about 50%, and then it chops off from there. But we get 5% of wherever we run, and then that's that.
So if you win a group one, 50% of the prize pool goes to that ownership group, and then you would get 5% of that.
Yeah, so say a race is $2 million, they normally give or take around $1 million. So jockeys take 5% of that, trainer takes 10, owners get the rest.
Owners ever sling you some cash or take yours out afterwards?
Yeah, you normally need to win a big race though.
What about when you go back to back group ones? Were you just thinking about the money? Obviously, you're not just thinking about money. You're thinking about the group ones and your own career, but the cash. You would have been counting the cash in your head, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's you basically are. I remember me and my wife now we're looking to sort of buy a place, and those group ones, there's nothing like them, because that's when you can really start sort of stacking the bank. And you know, you go from looking out west to looking in the eastern suburbs real quick.
Oh, that is very good. So you go from North Ryde to Coogee for the King over there. That is very good. What has been the best day, just in general? Like, what's the most winners you've ridden in one day?
Five.
And how many races were there? Nine? Ten?
Eight races at Geelong one day, and they were all for, David Hayes.
How good did that feel?
Yeah, that was incredible. Yeah, but they were all short in the market, so I knew that I'd come away with at least sort of maybe two, if I'm lucky three. But yeah, five winners was incredible.
That would be you'd be like invincible.
Yeah.
Yeah, my most has been four. I was lucky enough to do that twice at Randwick, and it's a pretty good feeling because you just feel like you can't get beat on anything. So yeah. It's a good feeling, that one.
Let's talk about other jockeys. Who's someone that you looked up to when you were younger? You know, we've all got favourite players. We all love our NFL. That's where we've all met. We're going to talk about American sport later on. But who's when you were a young kid, you're just jumping on a horse. I know you probably all looked up to, your family and whoever's been there for you. But another jockey, who's someone that you really wanted to be like?
For me, I'd say Huey Bowman. He was just I just liked his character, his persona. I loved the way that he ride. He was always cool, calm, collected in those big races, and always got the job done, week in, week out. And obviously you saw him ride Wenks over that span, and his ride on her, just, I know she was the best horse in the race, but his rides were just, he just had ice in his veins. He was just cool, calm, collected, and ended up becoming really good mates with Huey now too. But he was someone as a kid that always loved his riding, and he's an even better bloke.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I love that he's a good bloke. What about you, Dil?
As a kid, I grew up watching Frankie Dettori. My granddad's from Scotland, and he was sort of the reason Dad got into racing, because granddad was just a big fan of it. So I had little movies of him I used to watch as a kid, and I watched them numerous times. So it's a bit of a funny one for me. I didn't really know too many of the big Australian jockeys when I was younger, because it used to just be Frankie, or I'd go to the races with Dad and follow him around. So once I got a bit older though, I was lucky enough that Kieran McAvoy and Tommy Berry sort of took me under their wing to be their valet for a little bit. So as a young kid who loved racing, there was nothing better than that. They flew me to Queensland one day to do that. So from there, I built a bit of a connection with them. And then once I started riding, you realise there's some very good blokes in the room. So it's pretty good.
That's nice. Nice to hear. I was just thinking about the saunas and the, cutting, making weight. Like I've spoken to Regan about this when we've caught up, because he's going to saunas to just make weight. And I see the stress that it is on your body. It's, people don't understand how hard it is to just rock up day in, day out. I wouldn't say you're sleep deprived unless you're staying up late, but I'd imagine you would be at times. Talk to me about how hard it is being a jockey.
Me and Regan are sort of probably different in that aspect, but it shows how tough it is. Regan sort of, he obviously lives in Sydney and he's got his base here, where because he's a bit heavier, he probably needs to ride a bit less to make sure his weight's right for them days, where for me, I'm lucky, I'm naturally pretty light, so I do a lot more meetings, but occasionally them meetings catch up to you, because normally you can get home at a normal hour, but if the races are finishing at 5-6 o'clock like they are at the minute, and you're 2-3 hours away, you're having to drive home, you're lucky to be home between 8-9 o'clock, but then it's like you can't just get out of a car and go straight to sleep. So your body's then a bit wired, you're not getting to sleep till best case 10-11 o'clock. For me I've still got to do track work, so I'm getting up at 4-5 o'clock in the morning having to go again, and that's where it can take its toll and catch up to you, where Regan having to physically put his body through that strain to sort of cut out the energy you give yourself and have to sweat and do that, that rocks you just as hard as me doing 3-4 days a week. So doesn't matter what angle you take to try and make it easier. It feels like an uppercut some days.
No, I'd imagine it'd be crazy. How many times are you riding a week?
Me, at the moment, 3-4 times a week.
Yeah.
But, for example, this week I had trials yesterday, trials today, races Wednesday, got out of races Thursday, races Friday, races Saturday.
But Sunday off?
Yep, Sunday off. But before that, I had to ride the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it just dragged right through without a day off. And on that Thursday I have off, I'm still going to go to track work. So you're not really getting a day off.
Mm. Nah, it's great that you touch on all those points. It's just great insight. What about you, Regan? Like, as you said, you're in the sauna. You're trying to strip weight. Like, you're also probably getting home late as well. Like, how do you find it? Is there times where it's really tough?
Yeah, most definitely. Obviously, you know, Dylan touched on it, but sort of going to the steam room, I go to the steam room maybe 3 or 4 times a week, and just got to keep that weight down. I go running of a morning. I'll run 6Ks maybe every second morning, and sometimes on the day of the races as well. Just to make that weight. And this past weekend was a good example. I had to ride 54 on Saturday and Sunday, which is very light for me. And I also had to ride at Newcastle on Friday, so I had to get down to 54 on the Friday and hold it for 3 days right through till Sunday. So that can take a big toll on your body, mentally and physically. It is tough, but it's a very sort of very rewarding industry, you know. So although sort of it's a lot of hard work, you know, I wouldn't do anything else.
I'm just thinking about myself, right? I'm thinking if I'm going out to, Newcastle or Donald, I'm thinking, fuck, you know, it's a bit of work today. But on Saturdays, when you're going to Randwick and Flemington or Rose Hill or wherever, all the main tracks, is there just something different about it? Do you get a little bit of a pep in your step? Like, what's it like on a Saturday versus midweek?
Yeah, I love the big meetings and the big races. There's nothing like it. Just like any sport, like our Saturdays, we sort of work our whole week up to a Saturday. And Saturday's like our grand final at the end of the week. And that's where the big races are, the big prize money, the better horses. And yeah, that's what I thrive on.
What about you, Dill? Is there something, do you boys suit up, like look a bit sharper on a Saturday?
Yeah, we do. Some of us get a bit leery with a bit of floral and that.
That's brilliant. What about, yeah, so going to the track, there's something different about it?
Yeah, definitely. And like you touched on before, the money, you know, we don't ride for the money. When you win, all you think about is winning, getting your trophy and that. But like Regan said, them big days where there's big money everywhere, you know, you have some people who are running horses that are 50-1 and, you know, they may only have a couple in work. So you can run third or fourth. Sometimes that pays as much as 5 winners to them. So that's where the money can come into play, where you're not winning, but as a consolation, you're getting a pretty good check. And it's good for sort of them people who may not have much in work, and they can go to them days, target them days, and if they can run third or fourth, they'll walk away feeling like a winner, and it sets them up for another couple of months. So not that we do it for the money, but when the big days come around, you know, it's, I think that's why it's got that extra pep in its step, because all 10 races, you'd happily win any single one of them, and you ride a winner on the day, you're flying. So
yeah,
I think that's what's special about you. You go there just wanting to win anything.
Yeah, I love that. I'm just visualising the smaller trainers, and when you win, it just, they'd almost break down in tears when they're getting desperate and you boys have ridden a good ride. Let's go to the locker room. Funniest jockey outside of you two, who is it? Regan? Besides from yourself.
Myself.
it's hard. He doesn't leave any airtime for anyone else.
I've seen some interviews, you know, around Spring Carnival, and they go, oh, who's it? And they go, oh, Regan Bayless doesn't shut up. I'd love to be in the locker room with him.
The second funniest person is someone who normally sits him on his ass and fires back at him and gets him a bit startled.
And who would that be?
Anyone at any point. He's into everyone. So whoever's feeling good and maybe they've had a winner on the day and fires back at him, that's the second funniest.
That's very, very good. Who is the youngest gun on the rise as a jockey, young apprentice? Who is someone that you all really value and you think they're going to be really good in the future?
Regan Bayless?
No, I think...
Two are only young, but...
I think Dylan.
Yeah, Dylan. I know, Dylan's flying.
I think he's an apprentice. Obviously, he's lost his claim now, but...
Yeah.
You could always tell that he rode beyond his years. Like, it didn't, like, he was only riding for like 2 years and it looked like he had been riding for 10 years. So he's one that will be a good jockey for many, many years in Sydney.
on that, many, many years, when do you reckon you'd retire? Like, ideally? I know because a lot of people don't give it up till very late. And, you know, I'd imagine that's like all sports. No one wants to give it up. But as a jockey, you can sometimes continue on with your career, you know, to 50s, you know, as you know. But when ideally would you love to finish up as a jockey? Because as you said, it's pretty tough.
Next year, with any luck.
Well, back-to-back-to-back group ones, and out you're going, could you?
Well, it all depends where you are in your career. And horse racing is a very dangerous sport, and it's injuries come into play when you started getting a little bit older, sort of into your high 30s, early 40s. And, yeah, your body's not as young and doesn't recover as good as what it was when you're in your 20s. So all depends on how you're going at the time and injuries. And, yeah, there's no really set age where you can retire as a jockey. There's some jockeys that ride till they're 55. So it all depends sort of where you are at in your life, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much that's what Regan touched on. Yeah, it's all depends where you're at, because much as he wants to retire in a year, I bet he'd retire and he'd go insane with nothing to do. So I think we're all...
I'd get up to some mischief.
Yeah, you'd be doing something.
I'd be doing something.
We're recording this in the Vodka Soda Boys lounge, and he goes, "Geez, I'm in the wrong game, King." "I'm in the wrong game. I need something like that, King." Oh, very, very good. Welcome to first grade. Well, let's go to the pilot halftime segment before we talk a bit of sport and talk about what else you did growing up. But our pilot halftime segment, if you're struggling in the bedroom, boys, a little bit of erectile dysfunction, or, you know, you're struggling to get it up, hard made easy with pilot. So, boys, jump online, www.pilot.com.au. Use our one-time use code of ACES20 if you need some help, and pilot will look after you. Boys, pilot, our halftime segment here, our biggest flop. When's a moment you've had, not in the bedroom, Reggie, but your biggest flop, maybe riding a horse? We'll start with you. It's probably your most embarrassing moment. It'd be great if we can clip it up. Most of the boys have nailed this one. We love our pilot flops. What is yours?
It probably would have been when I was an apprentice. I was claiming three and I was just starting to sort of get my name out there in lights, and I had a ride for my first ride for Godolphin, which everyone knows they're world renowned, one of the best sort of operations in the world. And John O'Shea was training at the time, and the horse was named Alaska at Mooney Valley. And it was just I just slaughtered the horse. It was just an absolute train wreck and never got clear. And I think I just got held up from the 600 onwards, and it maybe got a little gap late, and it just should have won by about four lengths, but instead I ran like seventh or eighth. And that was so disheartening for me. To put on the royal blue colours, I was so excited to go out there and try and get the job done. And yeah, it was just a disaster. I remember speaking to John O'Shea on the way home, and it was for about an hour, and he just tore me a new one.
Oh, God, what were some of the things he said, if you can repeat?
Yeah, something we probably can't say on the podcast, but yeah, he wasn't happy. And I just remember going from here just to down here and just feeling like I was worthless.
What year was it? You reckon we can find some? We might be able to find the footage.
Yeah, so it was, might have been back in 2015, I reckon. What? 2015.
Yeah.
So yeah, a horse called Alaska at Mooney Valley, and as I said, it should have just won, but I just made every decision I made was the wrong one, and should have won by panels. And I remember I didn't get a ride for Godolphin for a couple of years after.
They are renowned as the best, so. Yeah, that is a flop. Some of them are, they're funny, but they're also, you know, you don't want that to happen to anyone.
No.
We've all had embarrassing moments in our life, and when you're at the top, it's public knowledge because everyone watches it. That's a good one. What about you, Dil? What's your pilot flop, your most embarrassing moment to date?
I had a bit of a blue at track work. We took a few horses to the barriers, and disclaimer, no horses or people were hurt, but the gates just flung open when we weren't ready, and the horses got away from us. And as a rule, when you come off, they normally just run home. And so me and my counterpart at the time, we were just walking down, head down, kicking some rocks, and we didn't realise the horses were still muddling around in front of us. And when they eventually got out, they took off down the track, and they just run for a bit longer than they should have. And my boss, he never ever smells constructive criticism, but I got a well-deserved and warranted shredding. I was scared for a good couple of hours after that. And when I had to see him, I tried to hide from him after. I was just running around like a headless chicken trying to do work. So it was well deserved, but that knocked the wind up me.
There you go. Are they intimidating, the trainers?
Yeah, they can be. Yeah, there's a few there that...
Who's the most intimidating?
my old boss Peter Moody was like, he's a knockabout Queenslander, but he's a pretty serious bloke, and when he's upset he makes it known, that's for sure. But he's a sort of bloke, he'll give you a spray and then he'll be laughing with you, you know, a couple of minutes later, so it's quickly forgotten about. But yeah, a few trainers can be intimidating for sure.
Yeah, I can only imagine it'd be tough work. It'd be very tough work. Well, we'll jump into, I want to know what about when you were growing up, what other sports did you play? Because, hey, Regan was the first one to knock me. He goes, King, you haven't touched it today. Any chance of touching it? You know, he gives me the feedback all the time when I used to play. Now I'm not playing. But did you love your sports, you boys? I know you love your rugby. I've been to the, we've watched State of Origin together. Growing up, what other sports did you play? Like, it's interesting to hear this.
I tried everything as a kid. I remember doing tennis, rugby league, soccer, cricket, played the drums, guitar. I know that's not sport, but I remember mum and dad wanted me to try as much as I can. Wasn't good at any of it, so ended up going back to the horses.
There you go. What was the, if it wasn't for horse racing, what would be the one though, out of all them? What were you best at?
Probably playing the violin.
You'll be playing that soon, I reckon. If you give it up, you'll be sitting there thinking of your next idea. What about you, Dil?
I was the same, because obviously mum and dad didn't want me to be a jockey. They just threw every sport at me. I played soccer, cricket, tennis, swimming, did the lot. The only one I was good at was soccer. So if I didn't, I would have had a red hot crack at soccer, but I just had a one-track mind, so I was always going to horses. But yeah, cricket, I was the most scared cricket player you'd ever see.
Really?
Yeah, I had a few mates who could bowl quick, and they just hit me a few too many times, and I said no more.
Oh yeah, in the nets, nothing worse than getting hit. I got hit on the shin. I've still got a dint in there. Should have had the pads on. That's very good. One question we've asked the boys, I've loved this one, is if it wasn't for horse racing and it wasn't for being a gun jockey, boys, what do you reckon you'd be doing for a crust? What do you reckon you'd be doing down the street there, Reggie, if you weren't a jockey?
Probably living out of your back pocket, Tommy. On Tommy Talks with the podcast, or I'll be the CEO of the Aces, I reckon.
He'd be very good at actually. He knows his NFL. He went a bit quiet this year though. The Dolphins went well. You went quiet. Normally you're a bit lippy.
Yeah, I'll be back next year with a bang.
I'll be back.
But maybe without the winners, he might not have been as chirpy and good at it.
Yeah, I know. You would be great on podcasts and sport. You're very funny. I know we've been very serious today. We'll do some more podcasts together. This one's obviously together. But you're a very funny man. You light up our NFL group, and it's been great that you introduced Dil. It's been fun. Who's the bloke that you love stirring up the most in our NFL fantasy group?
Benny Graham. He's a beauty. Stephen May as well.
Oh, you get stuck in
Maisie.
Yeah,
he gets stuck into Maisie, and yeah, he gets stuck back into me.
He doesn't like it, does
nah,
he, Maisie?
No, he doesn't like it. No. Intimidating, actually,
he
sometimes.
He'd let you know when you butcher a ride, I reckon.
Absolutely would.
What about you, Dil? If it wasn't for being a jockey, where do you reckon you'd be working right now?
I'd be doing a job with a minimum wage, I reckon. I made sure in school I had no choice but to be a jockey, so I'd hopefully have met Regan and grabbed onto his tail or grabbed onto your tail. That'd be the best case.
We might not have met, boys. We might not have met.
Yeah, probably. We'd just be some bums somewhere.
Yeah, I'll be in Riddles Creek. You'd be in, I don't know, then Brizzy doing something.
North Ride.
Yeah, North Ride. Playing. You'd probably be working at North Ride Golf Course or something. Some boys had to swing the clubs. It's very good. Well, let's get into sport. How did you fall in love with NFL? Obviously, Oz American Aces here. This is how we've all connected. But you've got Aaron Rodgers. You're a Green Bay fan. There's a bit of movement, as we said. When did you first fall in love with the NFL, Dil?
Oh, mine was a bit random. I sort of just, as a kid, grew up with consoles and that, and Dad sort of had half an inkling to it, but never really had a team or anything, and he just got me Madden. And so just from playing Madden, and then occasionally if the games were on a Sunday or I wasn't at school, we'd watch them together, and I just randomly picked the Packers. But from there, it just sort of slowly grew, and I was lucky when I was still in school, Dad took us on a holiday to America, and we went to LA, but we made the trip out to Dallas and watched the Cowboys versus the Giants when Odell still played for them. So from there, I was able to watch them live. And actually, 2 years before that, I wasn't fully into it, but we watched the old San Diego Chargers and Detroit Lions play. So I'd been to two games, and from there, it sort of grew and got into fantasy. And then obviously last year, Regan wanted to bring me in to do the fantasy with all you boys. And
How do you go? How do you go as a coach? Co-coach.
When he responded within the 7 to 10 business days I left, we were a good team. But
I'm meant to get older.
Oh.
A couple of white claws. The king gets a bit wild on the white claw. He's making a few real dodgy trades, the king.
Oh, I butchered one pick. I butchered Justin Fields. I just thought this would be the year that he'd take off. I just kept saying to Dylan, we need to draft Fields. We need to get Fields. We need to get him before anyone else does. And I think we had him benched and we were starting at prime time Kirk within 2 weeks. So,
you were big on DeAndre Hopkins because he just catches balls, but he didn't caught three.
Yeah, once you go to Tennessee Titans, it's...
I hit on Jahmyr Gibbs.
I ran into him. I met him in the casino. I think he was shocked that I knew him. I said, Jahmyr, and he like snapped his neck. He was with his missus at the time. He's only young.
Yeah.
He's not that tall. He's not that big either. Like the hits these guys take, they must be harder than
so
rock.
So me and Rudy got a chance, what you're saying.
Yeah, chance. Probably the same height as you boys. They just built like brick shithouses, you know. And yeah, got a photo with him. And I think he was a bit shocked that I knew who he was. I don't know. These running backs don't get enough love. I've just seen all of them get traded. But watching it live, they're one of my favourite positions to watch. You're on the money. He's going to be a superstar. And so are the Lions. I'm talking to Regan right now, if you're listening. Why do you love the Miami Dolphins so much? What is it about them?
I don't know. They were just a. I was following it for a couple of years. I remember how I first started following the NFL. I remember being bored and getting up early one morning, just putting the telly on, scrolling through the sports. And the first game I ever clicked onto and watched was Mahomes versus Brady in the AFC Championship when Brady was still playing for the Patriots. And that was just, I just like fell in love instantly with the sport and like religiously followed it since. And I just had to come up with a team, and I don't know, I just had to pick one, and obviously picked the wrong one, the Miami Dolphins. They've been a little bit disappointing, but no real reason, just they're just a team that I follow and like.
I don't know if you picked the wrong one. I reckon they're exciting to watch. There's a team to watch right now. Miami Dolphins are one of the most impressive, especially with Tyreek Hill there. They've got a lot of speed. If you guys could be anyone in the world for a week, so you could chuck your personalities into this body and you could just roll around and be them for a week, who would it be? I'll start with you, Regan. Who's the one guy you'd love to be for 1 week, and what week would it be?
Well, DiCaprio just like floats around on yachts in the Mediterranean Sea with like a different supermodel every month. So I had to say DiCaprio.
Leonardo for the king. And then he's married as well. Mrs. won't be happy with those comments. He'll be in the doghouse tonight.
Nah, cut that. Cut.
Straight to North Ride for you, son.
Half time.
Leonardo DiCaprio is a great one, actually. No, a lot of people go to sport, but yeah, he is the man. He's one of the best actors we've ever seen. What about you, Dil?
I'd lean more sports, so I don't want to get myself in trouble like Regan. I think it'd be cool to be an F1 driver, maybe Lewis Hamilton for a week, see what that's all about. Maybe when they go to the Monaco one or
something like that,
they go to some amazing places. It'd be cool to be one of them for a week.
Yeah, well said. Love it. That's very good. What about the coolest person you've met in your career? Who's someone that you would say is the coolest person you've met, boys?
Did you say that within our industry? Or?
No, in life.
Tommy Sheridan.
I've stumped Reggie. He's a bit
Prince of Bondi.
The Prince of Jesus, good to be back in Bondi. You take it for granted or what? This place is, it's stunning. I love coming back here. I know we travel to Europe and America, but something about Bondi, I reckon it's the greatest place in the world. Do you come down here a fair bit?
Actually, well, Dylan lives in Newcastle and I'm in Malabar, which is about half an hour away, 25 minutes to half an hour away. So don't actually get to Bondi that often, but I think the last three times I've been here is to catch up with you every time.
Yeah, we've lost our local.
I know we have. We're flat on that. We'll find another one though.
Yeah, we just go down the road, Cali Press or whatever's doing. You were doing boxing down here with your shirt off last time I was down here. The king had his shirt off down the front, right in front of all the local tourists, just boxing with your man. That's you get down here a bit more than I reckon.
Yeah, I am known to throw one. Shoulders on me like a brown snake, but I'm all heart.
Shoulders on me like a brown snake. That's good, boys. That's very good. Well, you know, when you come on Only Sport, we can't send you home with nothing. This has been great fun. It's been good to understand a little bit more about your industry. I know we could sit here for hours and talk. We will do more Tommy Talks. You know, I do me one-on-one, so I'll be back. But I got you boys some sunglasses. I know you got a Pinhead Regan, so I'm hoping these fit, mate. We've got the Boston Dark Grey Crystals. So chuck them on, King, and look down the barrel while you think about who you're going to take on tour. And Dill, I've got you the Melrose Champagne. They're both new and back in stock. Oh, wow. Welcome to first grade, King. Have a go at you in the Rixies.
Do it for Reg.
Happy day.
That's what you do it for. You'll be rolling in Saturday. If you don't ride a group one, this week, you're gone. Boys, looking sharp. Keep them on. Rick's on tour. I want you to think about where you'd go in the world if you had a week off. The missus said, boys, take two friends in the industry away. You can't pick each other. You got to pick two other guys. Who are you taking with you? What location are you going and why? Start with you, Reggie.
I'd go with probably Chad Schofield and Mark Zara.
I've heard Zara's the man.
Yeah, well, Chad's my best mate. Mark was a groomsman at my wedding and he just knows all the grouse joints to go to. Like you go away with him, he's got everything set out, lunches and after parties and everything. So we actually did a trip in Ibiza not so long ago, last year, and I'd be pretty happy to head back there, King.
I love it. I could only imagine that'd be a fun one. What about you, Gibbo?
I'd probably take my two counterparts in Tyler and Zach. We've all got pretty close because we were clashing in the apprenticeship titles, and I think it'd be pretty good because Zach's a bit of a loose unit, so we'd just follow him around, watch him run wild, and just tag along.
Yeah, you need that balance. What location would you be going?
Oh, we'd probably have to go to Vegas. We'd have to go to Vegas and probably do our ass all day.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, you definitely don't. Number 11, I'm still looking for it on the roulette table, boys. I've been looking for it for 3 years. Oh, that's all I've got for you. So I appreciate you coming down to Bondi and jumping on here and to Callet, letting us use his lounge room. Appreciate you. Pilot, we really appreciate your support. Without you, none of this is possible. And to everyone that tunes in, it's been fantastic. This is the last one of our Only Sport episodes. We've had some great chats with some great people and hope you all enjoyed. And boys, thanks so much for jumping on. All the best. I know we take the piss, but yeah, every time I'm tuning in, I'm just hoping you're riding winners and you stay healthy. And yeah, just all the best for the year and hopefully see you both soon.
One more time, because I really mean it. I just want to say a massive thank you for all the support you continue to give us at the Oz American Aces. If you want to further support us, make sure you like and subscribe, hit the follow button so you can keep up to date with all our exciting shows and announcements. Righto, now it's time to give our sponsors a massive plug. Struggling to make it to third base before striking out? Wood not driving like it used to? Let me guess, tackle's gone a little bit soft? No stress. If you're having issues in the bedroom, like erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation, Australia's favourite men's healthcare provider, Pilot, has all the clinical tools you need to get your game back on track. Thousands of Aussie men come to Pilot to get simple, discreet, and clinical treatments online. Pilot has free shipping, auto refills, and free follow-ups over text with practitioners. Get started today at pilot.com.au. And remember, play hard until the final whistle with Pilot. Aces, I know I always go on about the Rixies, but I got huge news. We have all our styles and colours restocked on the website right now. It's been months. We ran out of stock, but we're back. Get online, grab some sunglasses at rickseyewear.com.au right now and use our little discount code ACES if you want a 20% discount code on the house.